You're listening to your community radio station. It's KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa. It's time for In the Garden on the Farm.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters. The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or
underwriters. We're trying to get our cart machine running, but I will let you know that the views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters. Aloha, and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. We're your hosts, Paul and Robin, and on today's show, we'll get inspired to get started with small-scale livestock husbandry, chomp down on some delicious brassica, and give appreciation to the value of the root systems of the world. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with our generous underwriters, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, Kauai Marine and Mower, Anahola Stringed Instruments, and the Kauai Store.
Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe in Hanalei is proud to support KKCR and its Ohana, offering organic groceries and produce, a cafe featuring fresh salad bar, hot meals and soups, fresh-made smoothies, and baked goods. Located in the heart of Hanalei, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, 826-0089.
Kauai Marine and Mower, located in Old Kapa'a Town, is proud to underwrite this KKCR program. Kauai Marine and Mower features Honda garden and lawn equipment and also Echo power equipment. 823-0556.
Anahola Stringed Instruments is proud to support KKCR. Mickey Sussman has been building Island Koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored design and special orders. Prompt and complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a, on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products, including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Yes, technology continues to mystify us gardeners. We're of the soil, but we do our best. Robin.
Hello.
Oh, it's fantastic to see you as always.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Well, it is great to be here. And where are we? We're at Kauai Community Radio, a station we love. We love this opportunity to reach out to you each and every week. And we want to give you the opportunity to join in our celebration of the Fall 2015 Membership Drive. It's beginning Monday, October 5th to Thursday, October 15th. Our goal is to raise $60,000. You can get involved in multiple ways. You don't even need to wait until then. If you donate by October 4th, you could start today. You can become part of the early bird pool to get entered into a drawing for a two-night stay at the Hanalei Bay Resort in Princeville. Boy, that would be a nice vacation.
No doubt.
For sure. You can also become a sustaining member, and your contribution is deducted automatically from the account of your choice every month. So you can just give $5, $10 a month, something that's really reasonable for you, but it adds up for us. And then for $150, you can become a wave rider and have your brief message aired during every live two-hour program for the duration of our 11-day pledge drive, which is over 80 mentions. What a value. You can do all of this by visiting our website, kkcr.org. And thanks so much for contributing and for keeping us on the air and keeping us with our eyes toward better gardening and farming.
Indeed.
Yes.
Well, let's keep our eyes to the sky, shall we?
We shall. Let's do the celestial session. As we do, we bring you information on the movements of the heavenly bodies and how they influence our planting, our harvesting, and our other gardening and farming activities. Quiet down, birds. Okay, we have something to say right now. Today's moon phase brought to us by the 2015 Hanalei Moon and Tide Calendar, which is a Hanalei Watershed HUI publication. Also thanks to the U.S. Naval Observatory's Astronomical Applications Department. Today's Hawaiian moon is Ole Pau. Ole Pau will rise over Kauai at 3:16 p.m. this afternoon. She'll reach her transit or highest point in the sky at 9:03 p.m. and she'll set at 2:53 a.m. tomorrow morning. 76% of the moon's beautiful face will be illuminated. Fall equinox. Happy equinox to you. It happened last night at 10:20 p.m. And equinox, for those who are a little maybe confused on the details, as I was until I read this, equinox is the moment when the Earth's axis is tilted neither toward nor away from the sun. Not exactly the same as equal day and night, but it's pretty close. And for us, the date of equal day and night is coming up this Monday, September 28th, when the sun will rise at 6:28 a.m. and will set at 6:28 p.m.
Another cause for celebration.
And it only happens for one day. Then it's like 2 or 3 minutes off the next day. So it's really just that special moment in time. We have the full moon coming up on Saturday at 4:50 p.m. This is going to coincide with a total lunar eclipse. However, it will not be visible from Hawaii. This is going to be a supermoon, though, which is kind of a recent term for the moon appearing to be larger than normal. And the reason for this, the moon's going to be about 18,000 miles closer than it is at an average distance, which is about 240,000 miles away. The ike, or knowledge, on Ole Pau from a planting perspective, this is the fourth of four Ole moons in the first week of the Hawaiian moon month. And it is considered unlucky for fishing, planting, or beginning any important activity because Ole also means nothing. However, tomorrow's moon, Huna, if you're really excited to be doing some planting, is a productive moon. And it will be especially good for planting ipu, gourds, as well as root plants that are huna, or hidden in the soil.
Well, most excellent, because in the biodynamic look at things, that is mirrored just perfectly. Today and tomorrow, the moon being in the sign of Capricorn, an earth sign, making it time to work with our root plants. So that folds in pretty nicely. Saturday and... Friday and Saturday, the moon will be in the air sign of Aquarius, flower sign. So it'll be a good time to work with our flowering plants. And Sunday and Monday and Tuesday, we are looking at the moon's nice stay in the constellation of Pisces, which is a water sign, making it a good time to work with our leafy plants.
We love to work with the plants. Can we really call it work? Yes, we can. It's hard work, but we love it. And thank goodness it's not the hot, sweltering part of the year. It's cooled down a little bit. I'm sure appreciating that.
Sure. The evening times have cooled off a little bit. And, you know, I was talking with our dear friend's son last week, and he just is so full of so much interesting wisdom and knowledge, as we know. But one of them was that plants have our garden plants at least have a harder time in nights when the temperature doesn't go below 70 degrees. And I've been looking at the temperature ranges, and sure enough, nights have been in the 70s, 74, pretty warm, kind of as warm as some places are in the daytime. And I think on some level, the plant physiology doesn't get to kind of go to sleep when the temperatures are so warm, and that can end up stressing them out a bit. So nice to see the night temperatures have been falling just a little bit, and with a little rain on the way, things should be pretty beautiful.
And stay tuned, because we're going to get a chance to hear about how some of this weather has affected not only the plants, but the animals living on this beautiful island. We have a special guest in studio, so stay tuned. But first, we're going to take a trip to
the farmer's market.
Oh, yeah.
And this is something beautiful produce that's there almost year-round, but certainly when the hot time of year rolls around here, and the other brassicas, kale-type brassicas, are just a little harder to produce, there's one that shines above all others, and those are collards. Collards, they kind of laugh at heat. As far as I've seen, they're right up there with okra in that regard. Collards are low calorie. They're high fiber. They're packed with vitamins like vitamin C, vitamin A, carotenes. They actually have an amazing profile of vitamin K, and also high in B complex vitamins and minerals. And among the long list of phytonutrients that collards all offer is sulforaphane, which has proven benefits against prostate, breast, cervical, and colon cancers. So, unfortunately, all too common diseases in our modern world, and knowing that a little bit of collards can help protect you from these things certainly makes them high on my list of things on my dinner plate lately. And although collards can be eaten raw by juicing, there is caution given there, because there's two properties in collards, goitrogens, which kind of speaks for itself. And goiters, this would be a thyroid issue, so people with weak thyroids or thyroid issues probably would want to avoid raw collards. And there's also oxalate crystals in there, so people who have kidney issues might want to consider very little on the raw collards and utilize cooked collards more so. One of my favorite ways to use them is just to blanch them very quickly for less than 30 seconds and use them as a wrap, or, you know, to wrap basically anything in there. Totally delicious. But really, my most favorite way to eat collards is to saute them with a little onion or leek, depending on whatever's, you know, available, some chili pepper, and some of this fine locally made sausage that I've been able to get, which we'll talk about again a little bit more later in the show. But collards and onions and chili and really freshly made sausage, pretty unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
I hope people's stomachs are starting to growl a little bit. And then, of course, there's also just classic Southern-style collards, which you cook down for about an hour and a half with, like, a ham bone or a ham hock and onion and garlic in water in a pot. And not only are the collards absolutely delicious, but in the South they call it pot liquor, which is the liquid that's left in the bottom of the pot after cooking said collards. And boy, is that really delicious, too. So if you haven't reached out for a bunch of those collards on the farmer's market table because you don't think you like collards, I encourage you to just give them a try. They're really delicious and versatile and oh so good for us.
Mm. You're bringing to my mind and to my taste buds a meal that Krista prepared last night. She made an amazing lemon chicken stew, and she used the edible hibiscus leaf, or the bele, which I would say is in a way kind of similar to collards, where they're not that great if you just eat them on their own, but you cook them especially with meat, or making sure that it's part of something and they're properly prepared. Oh, they were divine. I'd never had edible hibiscus, and I bet collards would have stood in really well in that recipe as well.
I bet they would.
Yeah. Thanks for that.
My pleasure.
Yeah. So we are going to offer you a new segment on the show today.
Very exciting.
And this is a reflection of my ever-increasing appreciation and love for the agroforestry systems. Folks know that I'm deeply entrenched in the Food Forest Project up in Kalihiwai, and just really appreciating the difference of working in that sort of complex agricultural system with all of the various plants really playing a part in, you know, that plant, the relationships involved, both above and below ground, which we'll also get to later on in the show. But our new segment is called Woods of Wisdom. And today we're going to focus in on a genus and then specifically a species of plant that I'm hoping is going to show promise in our agroforestry system, and I'll tell you why. But we're going to talk about Caliandra. That is the botanical genus name for a grouping of plants, according to Wikipedia, about 140 species. And these plants are in the family Fabaceae, which a lot of people know are nitrogen-fixing trees. And they are native to subtropical and tropical America. And according to Wikipedia as well, members in this genus of Caliandra flower all year round and can be easily pruned. So these are really, when you're thinking about a chop-and-drop agroforestry system, the easily pruned part is really good, and the flowering year-round is really fun because, obviously, if we're bee lovers, pollinator lovers, we love to have flowering plants all year-round, and the flowers are beautiful as well to see, and they're similar to the ohia or mountain apple, like the native ohia or the ohia eye, the mountain apple, where they're kind of all stamens and no petals. Mm. They've got that sort of pincushion flower-like thing. And we don't have any native species here in Hawaii. We do have two naturalized species. The first one, Caliandra houstoniana, variety Calothursa, which is often referred to as Caliandra calothursa, which is a synonym of the now recognized name that I first said, has naturalized at Lanai City on the island of Lanai, as well as East Maui was the most specific that I got for that. The second one is Caliandra surinamensis, and this is the plant that I'm going to focus in a little bit more on. And it has been recently noted that it is sparingly naturalized on Maui at about 700 feet elevation in a residential area. This is a drier part of Maui, and this plant seems to be a plant of a drier habitat, although, as we know, a lot of these plants that grow in Hawaii have a wide range of ability to inhabit or at least perform well in dry areas as well as wet areas. Well, let's look at the weed risk assessment. This is something that the University of Hawaii does to help us make good choices.
Before we do that, is there a common name that we could refer to this plant as?
Sure. So the surinamensis is commonly called the Suriname powder puff. It's also known as the fairy duster. And this particular member of the Caliandra is also said to have a delicious fragrance to the flower as well.
Mm.
So beautiful and fragrant. This particular species native to South America. Now, we have generally avoided the use of Caliandra in our agroforestry systems because they're reported to be more on the weedy side of things. And the Hawaii Weed Risk Assessment Program looks at all the various different biological characteristics of a particular species in both its native habitat as well as places where it has naturalized, and all of the various ways in which it reproduces or is less likely to reproduce. And then it gets a score. Plants above 6 are generally discouraged, and plants below a score of 6 are considered safe to use. The plant in Caliandra that's most used worldwide in agroforestry and other systems where nitrogen-fixing trees are a desired component is this Caliandra houstonia variety Calothursa. It gets a weed risk assessment of 11, which is not super high, but it's definitely on the weedy side of things, and some discouragement of that has been given to us. We actually wound up planting one of them at the food forest just because it was I don't know, one of hundreds of nitrogen fixing trees that we planted, and I don't know, it was in the nursery or something. So we have one. It's a beautiful plant with fine bipennate leaves, really dark green and lovely, but we've always pruned it back and it's never even flowered. So we're not really at risk of a weedy situation from that one tree as long as we continue to do our work there, which I'm sure we will. However, this Calliandra surinamensis gets a score of -4, which means it's really unlikely to become a weedy problem. Now, it has naturalized on Maui, apparently, and so there are always those ecological niches where they kind of find their place. But this plant was first collected from a cultivated plant in 1930, Bishop Museum records indicate, and in all that time, this plant is fairly popular in the ornamental trade, apparently. I'd not heard of it before, but it hasn't ever naturalized apparently since then. So it's probably got a pretty narrow ecological envelope that it could inhabit. So we always want to pay attention to the potential for weediness and whether or not the plant, it's not just whether it would naturalize, but it's whether it's going to do something negative to the environment is when we would be concerned. But this plant has no thorns. It's not poisonous to livestock. It does get 12 to 15 feet high if you leave it unpruned with a 10 to 15 foot spread. However, it is very amenable to pruning. And this plant, Calliandra surinamensis, has a fast growth rate. It's drought resistant. It can be propagated from seeds and cuttings. It prefers full sun, but it can do okay with partial sun, partial shade. And as we're looking at new candidates for the food forest, we've been planting a lot of tall-statured nitrogen-fixing trees. The problem is that they begin to shade out our fruit trees. And so if we could have a short-component nitrogen-fixing tree that we could keep at waist level and it was still producing lots of green growth, that would be a real benefit.
Sure.
And so I
you could get the keikis out there pruning.
Yeah. And so I was really excited to see this plant in a photograph from Craig Elovich's new book on agroforestry for Pacific Islands. And it was in a photograph from Fiji with a mixed agroforestry system that one of the key components was sandalwood. And they're actually growing hybrid sandalwood trees, not GMO, but hybrid species that grow quickly because sandalwood is generally a very slow-growing tree. However, even though it's a hybrid, it still has this semi-parasitic nature to the tree, and in the early stages of establishment of sandalwood, it needs to have host plants that it can latch onto to obtain some of the nutrients from the root system of the host. And apparently in this agroforestry system, they're using this Suriname powder puff, the Calliandra surinamensis, as the host plant.
Oh, far out.
Is what Craig just told me a few minutes before the show started today, so I was grateful for that detail. And what can we say? It's multiple trunked, low branching evergreen shrub, silky leaflets, which are glossy copper when new, turning to dark metallic green. The profuse fragrant bloom is the main reason for its popularity, with big puffs 2 to 3 inches across of watermelon pink and white silky stamens produced during warm months, according to the U.S. Forest Service. So, sounds like a winner to me.
Sounds lovely.
If we're interested in doing nursery growing, we're going to consider inoculating the plant, and the plant is inoculated by the same rhizobial bacteria that inoculates or that colonizes the Howleycoa lucena species, which is very common weed here on Kauai and throughout the Hawaiian Islands. So I couldn't actually find a commercial inoculant for this plant, but if we go to any places where Howleycoa is
proliferating, which isn't too hard to find,
we could just gather some soil from underneath the Howleycoa trees and then put that in our nursery mix would be one way to do it. And it probably fixes nitrogen. There were some different There were a couple of different reports that it did and didn't. But I figure if one of the reports yielded a positive result, then it must fix nitrogen. The other report just wasn't effective because, as we know, our nitrogen-fixing trees are not always successful at creating that symbiotic relationship. It's kind of got to happen at the right time, the right moment. The example plant guild from Fiji included sandalwood, acacia, and a tree called pomuli, which is a fluegia species, which were grown as hardwoods. They had amaranth relatives underneath there, the Suriname powder puff that we're talking about, and taro. That was their plant guild.
Mm.
So I'm really excited to try this out. I've located some seeds online, and it's going to be some time to get the plants established, and maybe it's a little too late for the food forest because we're so far down the line. But for a new food forest system, we're really looking forward to collaborating with some good folks down in Waimea that are establishing a new food forest. This could be a great pioneer species that adds a lot of beauty and utility to the agroforestry system.
Sounds like a winner.
Caliandra surinamensis, common name, Suriname powder puff, or the fairy duster. And I look forward to bringing some blossoms into the studio and sticking them under everybody's nose sometime soon.
I look forward to the same.
And this is In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio. We're here until 1 o'clock, and we've got some great programming following us, so please stay tuned for all the great shows. Consider going to kkcr.org and making a donation. Register yourself in the early bird drawing for a two-night stay at the Hanalei Bay Resort in Princeville. And luckily, we've got a good amount of time to move on to our next feature presentation on the show. And, boy, I've done a lot of talking on the show so far, but we're going to hear from somebody else right now. So I want to welcome our special guest in the studio who's going to give us one woman's story on getting started with livestock husbandry on Kauai. Our special guest in studio is Jenny Rizzuti. She's the owner of Chubby Chickens Hatchery, which is located in the organic farming epicenter of Molawa'a here on the northeast shore of Kauai. And Jenny offers chicks of various breeds of laying hens as well as delicious eggs. Jenny's been kicking up the dirt on Kauai since she was 6 years old. And she happily shares her life here with her 3-year-old son Hayden and their dog Luna and all those chickens I just told you about. So, Jenny, thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Thanks for having me here.
Absolutely. And you are one of the hardest working people I know, so it really, truly is an honor to have you in the studio with us.
Well, thank you for that one today.
Yeah, for sure. It slows things down, huh?
Yeah, it's good, though.
Right on. So, when I met you, how long ago do you think it was?
2007, I think.
Some years ago. You were not raising chickens.
Nope.
So this has all happened relatively recently.
Yep, it really has, and it's been a great experience, and I've been really enjoying it, actually. It's been quite fun.
Awesome.
So what was the impetus? What kind of got you started? What was that? Something captured your heart and said, let's do this.
Well, I was your typical person trying to figure out what to do with my life and, had the full-time job, paying rent. Realize, it's not really my thing. So I moved out into the mountains at a very young age when I was 17 and kind of sparked it all for me, just realizing that I need to get back to nature and how happy and balanced I was doing all of that. And, had my fun time cruising and learning and then realized, okay, I kind of want to be involved with the community and see where my place is there. And of course, my son really helped me out with that too, knowing that I wanted to raise him here and seeing how he was going to grow up in such an amazing place and how I can hold a part of that. And then, I always loved living on farms and just started living on farms and took a bunch of classes, permaculture, gardening classes. I did the Go Farms course and I just kind of, the whole chicken thing actually kind of just fell into my hands. Moved onto a farm, and somebody had some chickens, and no one was taking care of them. And they believed that no one needed to take care of these animals. And I realized, no, we need to take care of these animals.
Sure.
So I just was like, hey, I'll take over the chickens. And they're like, fine, it's not a part of your work trade. And I was like, whatever, that's fine. And I just realized, like, if you bring animals into your life, like, they need to serve a purpose. Don't just be like, ooh, it's cool to have animals. Let's see how it goes. They need to serve a purpose. And I kind of just took that purpose into my hands. And I only had 22 at the time. And they weren't even laying yet, but I just absolutely fell in love with them. I just thought they were the coolest, funniest, smartest. Well, they're pretty smart, believe it or not. And I don't know. I just realized that I wanted more. And then, because it was just so much fun, and I was like, oh, yeah, we need more local eggs. Why not? So then I ordered them online, because that's what we have to do, and shipped them from the mainland. And long story short, neighbor dog came over, and they were gone.
Oh, heartbreak.
And, yeah, it was kind of. And then I just was kind of like, well, I don't want to ship anymore. I want to find a local source. And I really couldn't find a local source. And so I was like, well, you know what? Maybe I'll just start a chicken hatchery. And just kind of started from there. And it blossomed into a really beautiful, fun thing. Like, I have 60 chickens now. And it's really fun because I've actually created it to be this, like, learning environment where people actually come to the farm, see all the different ways that I'm raising the chickens. I have chicken tractors, rotational paddock method, rotational electric fence method, a paddock method where I split it into four different sections and do a rotational thing with a central coop, mm-hmm. where I'm starting to plant a food forest in the process of all of that, too, inside of it. And, yeah, all sorts of stuff. I mean, and then I just realized that I just love animals in general and ended up getting some goats and some pigs. And
well, what a value. What a value, because there's a lot of people who grow plants and produce around here, but the protein element is really important in our diets, and it's really awesome. I'm stoked. Let me ask you, when you came into chickens and then when you decided to order, did you know what breed you wanted? Were you specific about a breed? And I actually have questions, and I'm not sure if I understand correctly, but there's some breeds that are best for egg laying, and then other breeds that would be for meat birds.
Right.
Or can you marry the two? Are there breeds?
I have all dual purpose. That's what I was going to say.
Okay.
All of the chickens that I raise are good for eggs and meat. They have a good high egg production. But at the same time, their meat production is very good, too, because, you know, we all know running a hatchery, what are you going to do with the roosters? Not everybody wants roosters, especially with all the ones we have running around.
Sure. So there's recipes for that.
Of course there is. Yummy recipes.
Yeah.
And so backing up into the your time in the wilds of Kauai, you already had a really strong foundation in the ability or the value of animals to sustain life and the value of the flesh of animals and your ability to actually stomach the processing and all of that kind of thing, which I think makes this line of work a really good fit for you.
Yeah, well, I have to thank Luna, my dog, for introducing me into hunting. Mm-hmm. She just started bringing down goats, and I was like, oh, what am I going to do with this? And so I started to learn how to hunt. And I'm actually really grateful because it's taught me this whole respect for meat and what I eat and what I put into my body. And, you know, don't get me wrong, it's not the funnest process, but at the same time, I would so rather harvest and eat my own meat than go to the grocery store and buy packaged meat, which you don't know where it came from, how it was treated, or anything like that. And I get energy off of my meat, and it feels so good. Like, it actually carries energy when you actually harvest and eat your own meat and you know the animal lived a good life. The energy just flows through your body. It's actually quite amazing. And that's what really, I really want to move forward with, trying to bring local meat to this island. Good, well taken care of local meat.
Clean and clean. Healthy. And God knows that the Hawaiian tradition has it really deep roots in keeping livestock, keeping them really clean and healthy so that, you know, people who eat them can be clean and healthy too.
Yep, Hawaiians knew their stuff, that's for sure.
Yeah, precisely. So on the chickens, how long do you get eggs from a particular bird? You know, how many years or months? I don't even know what the cycle is. I don't know enough about it.
Well, you know, the first when they first start laying, which usually takes 6 months. It can be 4 months, depending on the breed and how well you actually take care of the animal.
Their diet, I would imagine.
Their diet is very important.
Yes.
And how you treat them and love them. I talk to my animals every day,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's
mm-hmm.
really important. But, you know, a lot of people love chickens, and they get very personal with their chickens. So, I mean, your chickens can live up to 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But every molting season, which is once a year, could sometimes even twice, it's about once a year, the egg production goes down. So the first 6 months of the chicken's life, it doesn't lay, but then it starts laying, you will get a very high amount. And every molting season that that chicken has, the egg production goes down.
Okay, and is molting at a particular time of year, or is it more the cycle of the chickens themselves and
the
environment
of,
where they live?
Yeah, I've really, it's been varying with me, mm-hmm. believe it or not.
So it's not like every November they molt or
too.
Something?
In my experience, no. It's been really hard to keep track. I mean, last mm-hmm. year they molted for like a month and a half. And I didn't
but
get
they do do it all at once. In general.
They do it all at once, yeah. I mean, I've known people, like, my chickens started molting before them, and then they called me, like, a month later, and they're like, oh, now my chickens are starting molting, and I'm like, oh, well, my eggs are starting to come back. So, I mean, I think it really varies of, like, where you're located as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And also
do you suppose
our
that
weather.
Temperatures
yes,
are
our weather
involved?
Is so mm-hmm. important. I mean, even just this last thunder and lightning storm we had, you know, it was mm-hmm. quite a show. My chickens got very stressed over it, and I didn't really get much eggs for the next 3 days from
wow.
that a little episode.
Incredible.
Yeah, so they're very sensitive creatures to the weather.
Sure. So just for our listeners at home, I know myself, I don't know much about keeping chickens or egg production, so can we just describe what molting actually means?
Well, molting means that they just basically need to take a break. You
okay.
know?
It doesn't. Are they losing
they lose
feathers?
Their feathers? Yeah,
okay.
they
okay.
lose their feathers, and they just need to take a break. And you know, they.
Is there some way that you change the nutrition during the molting period? I mean, I don't know. Does that matter, or you just is it better to keep
I would
it
love
consistent?
To. Sometimes I would love to just not feed them the organic feed because it's so expensive. And I'm like, you're not giving me eggs. But no, I feed them all the same.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't really necessarily change it. You know, I'm sure there's things you can do. Like I heard molasses is really good for them to give like them more egg production. Apple cider vinegar in the water. There's a lot of holistic ways to help your chickens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And on the subject of food, I know people are really... do a lot of creative thinking about what can I grow because the feed is so expensive and how can I grow enough protein and where are you with that and how much is insect farming really possible and do you do the roadkill in a bucket or what sort of processes have you found to supplement that?
Okay, well, I like to say I have a yellow thumb, you know. I just need some nitrogen to make it that good green thumb.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm working on it, you know. I do, you know, because I have harvested animals, I've tried that. And, you know, or even actually just leaving fruit in a bucket for a certain amount of time, maggots will come. Like, I had an abundance of lilikois. I just left them in the bucket, and the next thing you know, there was maggots everywhere. I gave those to my chickens, and they absolutely loved it. And I think that is a great way of doing it. I've been trying like sorghum and like I said, I got this 4-paddock rotation method that I'm trying out with a central coop and I'm like, I let them devastate the area, completely tilled it. I got like some squash, some moringa, some papayas. I really want to do bananas. I just really want to make a food forest within this rotational paddock. So when the fruit falls from the trees or a squash grows, they can eat it, you know. I'm not quite at, like, the can give you extreme amount of details because I haven't completely dialed it in. But I am going to be working with an amazing farmer, Ken Lindsay. I'm so excited. And we are talking about growing, like, having a field to actually grow corn and sorghum and grains and really try to you know, help the cost of feed because that is my biggest expense with this and rely. I don't really want to have to rely on that source, but I'm grateful mm-hmm. for it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're figuring out a lot of different things that we can do. I'm definitely in the experimental stages right now.
Cool. That's a great stage to be in.
It's fun.
And while we don't like to depend on the bags being brought in, because it is an important way to meet some of the nutritional needs, you were telling me earlier in our discussion that you have a windfall of a new source of organic chicken feed that's really changed the game for you.
Yeah, I mean, the price is a lot. It's significant. I can't say the word. It's way different. For how much bags I have to buy per month, it makes a big difference. And as much as I don't like to support big commercial places, there's a really great source on the island that is selling it significantly cheaper. All organic as well. And I actually, I'm very grateful for it.
Indeed. And you were saying that you were speaking with the person who does the ordering, and they said only if enough people buy it are they going to continue to bring it in.
Right.
So if anybody who has poultry, and what is the range of, this is for chickens, would it be for other kinds of poultry as well?
Gosh, probably.
Maybe so. Well, chickens is what people have most by and large. And so for people who might be interested to learn more, the Costco?
It's Costco. It's got to be grateful sometimes for that place.
Far out.
Yeah.
So there's an opportunity that could be valuable to some people.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, I have friends who live in Humboldt, and the Costco there is like all organic food because that's what people keep asking for there. And it's pretty different than our Costco here. And so the more people ask for it and want it, the more that will change for us too. I want to ask you, so besides chickens, have you gotten into any other fowl like ducks?
I'm hatching some right now as we speak. And I would like to get into turkeys, but as of now I'm focusing on my chickens, and I'm going to be moving forward with an IMO pig farm.
Right, which I definitely want to ask you about. So how about something just like in between those two? Did you ever consider rabbits? Is that just a little too much work? Or
I tried the rabbits, and they're awesome, but if they get out, they can...
Invasive species trouble.
Because
especially
like
where you live, they're going to head right to the lettuce field.
Their poop's great, don't get me wrong, but...
You wouldn't make any friends with your neighbors.
No, I kind of got this little rabbit tractor I'm working with right now, you know, where I just kind of like move her along and let her do her thing and munch on the greens, but like inside of a contained thing where she can't get out.
Right.
I'm working with it. I also have goats. Goats are really fun. And I just really got them just to help me not have to run my weed whacker so much, really. It's just, grass we have is, you know, grows
the
6 inches
grass.
A day, and, you know, they love it. So, yesterday I thought I was so smart, and I was like, I'm going to put them in my yard while I'm gone, and moved them out of their pen and moved them into my yard, and they decided to get into my house and rearrange my furniture.
Ooh.
Yeah, so, like I said, I'm learning. I'm going to keep them in their pen and do the electric fence rotation with them, I think.
Not a bad idea.
They're not the best roommates.
You know, let's not lose the IMO piggery, because I know a friend, mutual friend, John Parziali, did an awesome IMO pig pen.
Yeah,
that
he's
was
a good
like
friend of mine.
So
very
cool.
Inspiring.
Really?
Yes.
And I couldn't smell the place at all, even standing right next to it. And I mean, I think that's mainly what people kind of get tiffed about when it comes to piggeries is the smell. And you said you were bringing in some Berkshire.
I am shipping over pure Berkshire pigs. Yeah. It has been quite a process, I'm not going to lie, but once they arrive, it will be so worth it. I mean, these pigs are absolutely amazing.
They're quite delicious too.
Completely delicious. Marbled meat. I mean, they are pasture-raised pigs, one of the very few breeds that can actually live off of pasture. Mm. And with the amount of pasture that we have here and the grass that we have, it is going to be the perfect match, I am pretty sure. And these pigs are very beautiful, and they have great personalities. They're very easy to work with, and I'm bringing over some pigs from the mainland. Been on the phone with so many people to try to make this happen.
I'm sure the agricultural inspections and things like that. And then the big question is how to keep their breed pure and keep the local pigs from sniffing around.
I am putting up huge fence as we speak.
The Great Wall, I imagine. Yeah.
Worth it. It's an investment, but completely worth it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, Jenny, and I want to remind people, we're speaking with Jenny Rizzuti, and she is the owner-operator of Chubby Chickens Hatchery. I guess the name's going to have to morph as your operations expand as well. But I'm curious to know, of these various breeds of livestock, are there any good matches where you can keep a goat and a chicken or a pig and a goat in the same enclosure, or do you have to keep them separate? Or are there benefits to keeping them together?
You know, there's so many different opinions on that. So I really would just recommend what people experience, because I've been told, like, I had some of my roosters, like my roosters I'm raising for meat, in with my goats, and there, some people are like, oh, you shouldn't do that. The goats will eat the chicken poop. They don't know any better. And, you know, so I don't really know. I did when my pigs, Hammy and Spammy, were younger. I had them with the goats, and, you know, I would not recommend putting pigs with any animal.
Well, I know in Joel Salatin's way, he just rotates them through. Like, first come the cows,
and then come the chickens, and then come the pigs. And that's what I've been doing with the paddocks. I would have the goats in there first, mm-hmm. and they would get the tall stuff and knock it down, and then I would move the chickens, and then the chickens would scratch it up, and then the pigs are great tillers. Mm-hmm. They really are. Yeah. So that's what I would recommend as a rotation. But that is something that I'm also working with and learning as well. So, and I'm going to be getting some cows too, eventually, once the pigs are here and established.
Wow.
Yeah, mini Jerseys.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
And what, elephants next?
Well, I have a tortoise, so that's kind of exciting.
Fabulous.
She's going to be my lawnmower for my yard.
Very cool.
Wow.
Well, I want to start a zoo, I think.
It is looking up to be a pretty delicious future, especially with somebody as inspired and intelligent as yourself behind this. I'm stoked, and I want to say anything I can do to help you out.
Yeah.
And I'm your first customer, too.
You've been a great one.
Yeah. And on that subject, what sort of support from the community are you wanting? How can we help you? How can we support somebody like you in your position who's, you know, building this from the ground up? I mean, what are some of the hardest things that if you had a little bit more support from the community that it would be a smoother ride?
Well, I always recommend that the community buys as locally as they can and support, you know, local farmers. I mean, I would love to see people, you know, starting to buy local meat, and I know it's kind of hard to find right now, but I'm really trying to change that, and I'm working out all the details on how to make this possible in a legal, clean, everyone's happy type of way where I ain't stepping on anybody's toes. I don't know. I mean, I know we're all busy with their lives, so just keep smiling and supporting locally. And
Yeah,
well, I can say right now you can get Kaneshiro island-raised pork cuts at Big Save in Kapa'a, at least. And also, I've been going over to the Medeiros Butchery there in Kalaheo, and they've got awesome locally raised, unsprayed, pasture-raised and finished beef going on that's really quite delicious, and it's worth it with a few friends to make monthly trips over there, you know, because I feel the same way as you. We got to keep the protein sources, you know, buying from right here on Kauai. It's really important so that people like you can keep making money and keep expanding and doing more. So there's a lot of us here,
yeah,
a lot of eaters.
And we don't want to rely on the ships anymore to bring in our food. I think we have all the resources to make anything possible.
Yeah, and we can make it more high quality and nutrient
dense.
Better,
yeah.
Way better.
Totally.
Yeah.
Jenny, I know one of the constraints for small meat producers has been the lack of easily accessible slaughterhouses, and there's been talk of a mobile slaughterhouse, which people do quite successfully in other parts of the country.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And has there been any move, and it was maybe going to be county funded, and do you
know
where
they're at? Well, they're starting it on the Big Island. Right now, they're doing a trial with the Big Island, and I'm pretty sure they're, from what I've been told, they're moving forward, and it's looking pretty good. But as of here on the island, I was thinking about doing it, and then I realized that there's a lot to happen with that. So I would really like to see how it works with Big Island and kind of oversee that, and then see if someone has the courage to step in and start something here.
Sure, the courage in the bank account, probably.
Yeah,
so people
sure.
out there listening, if you want to support the movement, it seems like if you've got a big check that you feel like spending, maybe that's a great way to go that could really help out a lot of people.
Absolutely. And Jenny, as well, you were telling me you're putting up this mega fence right now, and that you told me you're doing it most of it on your own. You've had some help, but you're doing the lion's share on your own.
Yeah, it's been quite a interesting, fun, hard-labored project. I mean, if anybody has an extra hand and wants to help with that, I would love the help.
Well, it seems like a super learning opportunity for people. What a valuable skill. You're building this thing to a very high level standard. And so for people who are interested in donating some time to learn a valuable skill of fencing, for people who are interested in getting some of the products from your hatchery, whether it be eggs or any of the other products that you do, let's give them your phone number.
Yeah, please do.
All right. What be it?
My phone number is 808-645-1232. Or you can add me on Facebook if you need more friends, you know, in your life.
Right on.
You just type up Jenny Rizzuti, last name spell Rizzuti.
Woo!
Yeah. And we'll make it fun, you know. It's always fun building fences and digging holes. And
yeah.
H-bracing, you know. We're going to be doing it right. So, yeah, if you do want to learn how to make your corners good so your fence can be properly tightened, it is so key to have good corners. You know, you don't just want to throw sticks in the ground and think your fence is going to last because when you got animals that, you know,
like to rub up against it,
want to look on the other side of the fence, you know, you want to make sure you're doing the fence right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Well, I personally could just keep going with this conversation on and on. You're just fascinating, and I love all the products you're talking about.
Absolutely. And yet, we're going to jump over to a soil discussion. Jenny, you're welcome to join us in this discussion if you have any tidbits you want to share. But we are going to finish off the show with Secrets of the Soil Builders. And we're going to focus in on root decomposition and then maybe even more generally just some of the values of roots in general in systems. So, Robin, can you start us off?
I will. Well, you know, roots are holding the world together in their own way. And when we talk about the value of root decomposition as far as adding organic material to our soils, it's really a value in low-till or no-till systems particularly. We can cite some research where, you know, the tillage is really going to change, be a game changer as far as how those roots that are now the plants that they were once attached to are gone, they've been harvested, or have just finished their lifespan. There's a couple different ways to look at this with annual systems, and we talk about cover crops in that case. We could talk about lots of annual crops. And then there's perennial systems, so trees and perennial grasses and grazing situations. I guess we'll start with annuals, just a little more straightforward, a little simple. And so long as the crop was not diseased with soil-borne pathogens, like nematodes, for instance, it can be good to leave the root systems in the garden beds. And again, if this is a large-scale farming system where high production is the goal versus someone's backyard garden, the principles would probably change a little bit there, too. But the root systems can be valuable. They do accumulate and add organic material, although measuring this has been very difficult for the scientists, because being able to measure the organic matter that's left deep in the soil or even at 2 feet in the soil versus what has accumulated on the surface as leaf litter from falling things, it's just very, very hard for them to calculate.
Especially hard for us in the Hawaiian soils, where the classic test for this would be to burn the soil, and then the thought being that the difference in weight is going to be the organic matter that was included. But as once again our farming advisor, Sun Hadley, has taught us that some of those iron oxides actually burn up. And so you get an inaccurate result in our subtropical soils from doing that test. And so we can't know for sure how much organic matter has been in the soil from our crop residue.
Right. And so I can say from experience that cover crop roots actually improved my soil structure in my garden beds where I chose to use them. That was while they were living, while the cover crop was still alive. I could pull up a few, and the soil around them had just improved so much. It was had been hard and compacted from too much rain and a bad season. And then, of course, these cover crop roots, in some cases, like with sun hemp, will actually attract bad guys by being good hosts to things like nematodes, and there's that. But then there's what happens as the plant is gone. And I'll just give a little anecdotal story. A friend of ours, lovely guy, Vlado, I hope you're listening. He told me to plant a chayote in an old papaya stump, you know, where a papaya tree had grown up to a beautiful old ripe age and was now gone. And there's that soft mushiness. And he said the best chayote he'd ever grown was planted in a papaya stump. So I did it. And I got to say, my chayote is taking off so beautifully. And I can visualize the roots of the chayote are just entering into all those channels that used to be the roots of the papaya plant. And there's just so much organic matter for them. It's like pure compost that my chayote can grow in. And so that's kind of a visual for people to think about. Trees can be the same way when a big old tree falls or somehow is damaged. And all those roots that are down there are going to start to decay because there's no more photosynthesis. There's no more life happening. And they feed so many things.
Right. And we were talking about nitrogen-fixing trees earlier, and scientific research showed that new colonizing roots of nitrogen-fixing trees, if they're able to access those previous channels that contain the carbon-rich material from decayed former plants growing in the soil, are much better at creating nitrogen-fixing nodules than a corresponding part of the same plant just growing in mineral-rich soil. So lots of value to the underground decomposition, the biological activity, and the pioneering work that roots do to increase water infiltration, to increase pore space, which allows enough oxygen to be around the root systems. So definitely very important to sort of measure your strategy on tillage. Tillage is very important when done at the right time. If you're working with a heavily compacted soil, it's a great first start. But if you have a more mature soil, root decomposition in the soil, which I was interested to learn as well, happens during the life of a perennial plant, the roots are dying all the time. And the roots actually, the plant will actually decide that a certain portion of the soil where its roots are laying has been mined of whatever the limiting nutrient is and will allow that part of the root system to die so it can redirect its energy toward a virgin part of the soil that has higher amounts of that nutrient.
Sure, and the similar thing happens in a grazing situation when the top of the plant is nibbled down by the herbivore. The plant can let go of some of that root system underneath because as below, so above, and vice versa. So we have roots dying off all the time, and this builds soil from the ground up. This is really important factor.
Yes, indeed. So we love your roots. Thanks for holding the earth together, as we said, and you'll be hearing more next week about the value of returning roots to severely damaged ecosystems on next week's In the Garden on the Farm. We want to give you a couple of announcements before we bid you a fond farewell today. Coming up actually this weekend is the 25th. Annual Hawaii International Tropical Fruit Conference happening Friday through Sunday, September 25 through 27. It's at the Courtyard King Kamehameha Kona Beach Hotel in Kailua Kona on Hawaii Island, featuring keynote rare fruit explorer Joseph Simcox. and a fruit tour led by fruit expert and our good buddy Tom Baldwin. Lots of other great speakers. There'll also be on Monday the 28th a tour here on Kauai, a post-conference tour with the local crew here, which will be great. I think they're on the east side. And for more information, including a look at the conference agenda, you can go to HawaiiTropicalFruitGrowers.org. We also have a Kauai Chocolate and Coffee Festival coming up October 23rd and 24th. It's going to be in historic Hanapepe Town. And, boy, the list of sponsoring organizations is multitudinous.
Well, talk about a buzz. Man, coffee and chocolate. That will be an active festival.
Absolutely.
Hope there's plenty of activities for people.
If you want to get involved, for more information, you can call Tiffany at 225-3917, or you can email info@KauaiChocolateAndCoffeeFestival.com. Yes, please.
This has been In the Garden on the Farm with your hosts, Robin and Paul. We'd like to thank our guests on the show today, Jenny Rizzuti. Thank you so much. You're so inspiring.
Thanks for having me.
And you can reach her at 645-1232. And we will ask you to please tune in again next week for more stimulating conversation on our relationship with the life of the land that gives us life.
Aloha. Aha, yes indeed. This is KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Hale Iva. Stay tuned for Kauai Vibrations.